We're taking a break from fresh episodes for a bit, but instead of leaving you hanging, I'll be republishing the episodes that I think deserve a second listen. I know, we love us some fresh content, but smart ideas are worth hearing twice, because sometimes hearing something again is exactly what will move us from passive listener to actually adding the strategy to our toolkit. So put those earbuds in, pull that pen out, let's make this re-listen actionable. He quote-unquote shouldn't be asking people to hit reply with their favorite episode and asking for them to take the quiz and telling them that he's here to help with the other podcast-related questions. That defies the rule of one. But the cool thing is that all of these actions lead to the same goal, building that relationship, building up their esteem and probability for success as a podcaster. It doesn't matter what they choose. It only matters that they choose. Welcome to Email Swipes, where we peek behind the scenes at the emails that catch your attention and earn their place in your swipe file. Every other week, we'll talk to an email expert about an experiment they ran, and in the following episode, we'll dive into the strategies and methods used in the email so you can inform and inspire your own email work. I'm Nikki Elbaz, the copywriter behind winning emails for 8- and 9-figure SaaS and e-commerce brands like Shopify, Four Sigmatic, and Sprout Social. And I know that hearing the background stories to these emails will help you turn pie-in-the-sky insights into plug-and-play actions. Ready to make inspiration tactical? Let's go. First, a quick recap of the email we discussed last week that we'll be digging into today. Hey, congrats on your success with email swipes. I immediately noticed you've released more episodes than most podcasters ever do. Keep it up. I'd love to listen to the show to support it. What's one of your favorite recent episodes that I can start with? Drop me a link so I can listen. On my end, I created a quiz called PodScore. It's a data-driven free quiz that helps podcasters reach their goals faster. Plus, it tells you which of the 12 podcaster personality types you are. I'm the software savvy savant. I'd love for you to take the quiz. When you send me your recent favorite episode, let me know your podcaster personality type too. If there's anything I can do to be helpful, let me know. Everything I do is in my signature. So glad to be connected. Looking forward, Alex San Filippo. Focused on helping podcast hosts and guests reach more listeners and grow their income so they can change more lives. How I Serve Podcasters, PodMatch, matching podcast guests and hosts for interviews. PodScore, take the quiz to find your podcaster personality type. Podcasters Report, see how your podcast compares to the industry. I'm a real person, but if you don't want to hear from me, click here. I respect your privacy and won't email you again either way. I am secretly hoping that last week's episode will be my most popular episode. I know, I've said before, this one's my favorite. No, wait, this one's my favorite. But this time it's different. Yes, there's a lot to learn from it from a copy and strategy perspective, but there's even more to learn from it from a business practice perspective. Alex is a legit good guy, and he runs his business in such a unique way because he's really following his guiding principles, not just some playbook of how to run a SaaS. This is both really encouraging from a people relationships perspective, but it's also just really unique and fresh. Most of what you see has been done before, and things start to feel stale. Not so with PodMatch. I feel like I find another gold nugget delighter every time I go to their site or get an email notification from the community. Okay, but enough about PodMatch. Let's get into the email. If you ever start a podcast, prepare yourself for a lot of cold pitches. Like, a lot of cold pitches. Everyone from editors to managers to community builders will be getting in touch with you, congratulating you on making it past episode 5. And then pitching you on whatever it is that they do. So the fact that this email stood out is already saying something. My favorite part of the pitch was when Alex asked which episode he should listen to. That's tangible interest. I was a little skeptical that he would actually listen, but we'll get into that part in a second. And even still, it gave a feeling of recipient interest versus self-interest. Another thing that I found interesting was how Alex led with something of value, free. Which obviously was the whole shift in strategy from that typical cold pitch to this version. The reason I found it so interesting is because I have always been a big proponent of the idea that you don't need to nurture pre-pitch, that you can pitch right away and build trust within the email itself. You don't need a whole warm-up to get to the main event. Clearly, that didn't work for him, and it also didn't work for anyone else who cold pitched me. So I'm rethinking this idea, and what I've come out with is that to succeed at cold email, you need to know how others are pitching your recipient. The fact that everyone in the podcast industry pitches me, driving me straight to their paid services, means that there's room for differentiation. Does that mean you can't drive to the paid service and differentiate some other aspect of your pitch? Of course you can, but that takes a bit more creativity. But the more important aspect of all of this, Alex tested driving to his paid service, and the results weren't what he was hoping for. This shift was based on data, and thankfully, his new hypothesis proved correct, which I mentioned in the episode, is the most critical aspect of cold pitching, testing, iterating, testing, iterating, testing, and iterating some more. So let's wrap all this up into a takeaway. Cold pitching is not a one-and-done sort of method. You may see some success like that, but typically, you'll need to try different offers until you land on the right one. And that obviously will affect the copy as well. So look at cold pitching as a sprint, not as a project. One thought I'm having, by the way, about how they hit success after just two tries is because they built learning and iterating into their process. They have that staggered send time buffer for all their emails. They have that beta group. They're always talking to podcasters and businesses that serve podcasters. So takeaway number two, the more research you have, the stronger your hypothesis is going to be. I found Alex's creation process so inspiring. I love that he took 2 weeks to create this one email. One email that had a goal of sounding like himself. I know, sometimes I feel like writing like you speak can be an excuse to be lazy with my writing, but he didn't get sloppy. On the flip side, sometimes sounding like yourself can be so hard and can actually take way longer than using someone else's voice. And that can lead to a different kind of sloppiness. Either you just never do it, getting stuck in the perfectionist trap, or you just give up and go with mediocre. Alex was smart. He gave himself the time to let the full process happen without pressure. And that's takeaway number three, finding that balance of both time and headspace, where you have a goal, ideally a timeline, but you don't have that pressure that kills the process. By the way, when he said that the one thing he's looking to improve is to shorten his words to increase comprehension, I think that's a particularly relevant goal for cold email. The whole people have no attention span thing is a bit of a scientific misunderstanding, but what is not a myth is that we are particular about where we give our attention spans. We have to be interested and engaged enough to be willing to give someone our attention. It's not that we have short attention, we're just picky about where we give our attention. So when we're sending an email to someone we haven't built a relationship with, we either have to build that relationship really fast, which is where creativity with cold email comes in, or we have to get our message across really fast. And obviously both is ideal. Personally, I felt like Alex did build a relationship quickly when he asked which podcast episode he should start with. He showed interest in my work. And that's why you'll see compliments in the first line of cold pitch templates. That's what they're trying to compliment with the whole compliment sandwich. So takeaway number four, be quick with cold. Not necessarily with the pitch, though that does work, but quickly building the relationship works too. Alex said he only sends one email because he doesn't want to be annoying. I personally don't agree that it's annoying to send one respectful follow-up a week or two later. People are busy, people go on vacation, people need time to prioritize things that aren't on their immediate to-do list. They sometimes even just need time to get used to hearing something. I'm amazed again and again and again by how many times I've given up on something, either a podcast invite or a lead who reached out, and I push past the don't be annoying inner voice and send a follow-up, and the response 90% of the time is gratefulness that I followed up. But I still stand by what I said in the episode. It's his business. He's writing in his voice. It's his personal brand. And if it doesn't feel right, then it doesn't feel right. There is so much room to work within best practices. They're not set in stone. And number two, not every best practice even works. His experience is so different from the best practice of send lots of emails so you stay top of mind. His email stays top of mind, 6 months later even, without a single follow-up. So there's no reason for him to do something that he's uncomfortable with. It's working as it is. He's giving enough upfront value that people will keep it top of mind themselves and get to it when they get to it. So we have two takeaways for number five. Don't be scared to follow up. If done respectfully with the recipient's interest in mind, people actually appreciate them. And on the flip side, find that balance of following best practices. If it doesn't feel right, find another way to reach that goal. Loving these episodes? You'll love my email playbooks. They're chock full of inspirational swipes, and my comments are even color-coded, so you get a super clear breakdown of what works and what doesn't work about each email. Plus, I break down all the nitty-gritties of each flow, so you know exactly what to include and why without ever giving you cookie-cutter templates that hem in your creativity. In fact, Paul Melrose, who bought the playbook bundle, rated them a 10 and said, "Since using Nikki's playbooks, starting work on an e-commerce email sequence without them would feel like jumping out of a plane without a parachute." And these are not copy and paste solutions either. They work because Nikki gets you to understand the essential concepts at play so you can solve your own or your client's email problems. Big love and appreciation for what she's given us. Check out all 12 email playbooks on offer at nikkialbaz.com/email-playbooks and stop jumping out of a plane without a parachute. Let's talk about responses now, because we started getting into that, what with the whole people responding 6 months later thing. I've said it before and I'll say it again. My favorite metric is the response metric. It builds the relationship, it gives you a more definite pulse, and honestly, responses are just fun. But cold email is very vulnerableifying. You will get rude responses when you send cold email. There's so much bad cold email that some people just bristle immediately at the sight of a cold email. They won't even give you a chance. I love that Alex's wife screened his emails. I've heard this advice from others, and it really is helpful to give yourself a bit of buffer time before hearing criticism or instead just hearing it from a third party. And how cool that people actually respond to his request for help. That means it feels genuine to them, which I think ties into what he mentioned. The podcast industry is full of altruistic people. They've started a podcast because they want to help. So they don't just click the link suspiciously and then believe him when they see the value themselves. They actually read his email more altruistically and trust him more quickly. I personally didn't fall into that category. I am a marketer after all. Remember, I wasn't sure he would actually listen to whichever episode I would recommend, and I sure didn't think I could really respond with some other podcast-related question and that he would actually take the time to help. But the fact is that most of his audience does trust him off the bat. And there's a safety net for those who don't. That's the whole strategy of the offer. He's giving value with the quiz and the course without anyone having to even hit reply. And this is actually really interesting because typically emails should only have one call to action. He quote unquote shouldn't be asking people to hit reply with their favorite episode and asking for them to take the quiz and telling them that he's here to help with the other podcast related questions. That defies the rule of one. But the cool thing is that all of these actions lead to the same goal. Building that relationship, building up their esteem and probability for success as a podcaster. It doesn't matter what they choose. It only matters that they choose. One last response comment. Alex mentioned how he sends video responses sometimes, and I love that idea. He sent one to me when I responded to his pitch with a pitch to come on the podcast, and it really built the relationship just to see the person, hear the way they speak, talk to them async. So takeaway number 6, responses is where you're going to feel that human relationshipness of email the most, for good or for bad. It's where you'll feel more vulnerable, and it's also where the community building happens and where you can really continue things with conversations that are one-on-one or even video. Okay, so now let's get into the big question of this episode. Were Alex's coaches wrong? When they told him that people don't value free, when they told him not to give away his $1,200 course for free, were they wrong? I mean, clearly they were. In 1 year, he had over 6,000 people go through the quiz. But why? How? People don't value free. And I think it comes down to 3 things. Number 1, he had a why. He wanted to help. He wanted to get the word out in a more creative way. That pushed him to succeed. The whole people don't value free idea, it touches us as creators as well. When we make something free, we don't value it either. So of course our audience won't. He didn't fall into that trap. He made the effort to push it out and make it happen. Next, he had a great story to tell, how everyone advised him against this. It's just a very engaging way to introduce the friction. And last, he used the psychological principle of prove me wrong. People love that kind of thing. We want to see underdogs succeed, and we want to invalidate assumptions that paint us in a negative light. So takeaway number 7, again, find your space within best practices. Can you point to why something will work even if it doesn't work for 90% of humans? Do you have a theory or strategy for getting to your goal even as you're going against the grain? Okay, last thing. Don't step away from this episode without checking out the PodMatch website. When I said that Alex and team are doing things really uniquely, when he said he's doing things serve first, we are not exaggerating. There are so many little things across the site, both copy-wise and offer-wise, that are so unique and so cool. It is a great, great swipe. Thanks for geeking out with me about that email story. If you enjoyed either of these episodes, you'll probably enjoy getting my emails. Plus, you'll never miss another episode. Sign up at nikkialbuz.com/subscribe. And yes, that link is in the show notes.